Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. In a time when our scientific understanding of the universe has never been greater, why do so many people feel disenchanted and alienated? And I'm not just talking about what we're all going through right now while we're all on lockdown. I'm talking about a malaise that has been affecting many of us for a long time. Tonight's guest, research paleoanthropologist, shamanic practitioner and teacher, and best-selling author Dr. Hank Wesselman, is not the only person to observe that our search for objective knowledge has come at the cost of a deeper, intuitive rapport with nature and our spiritual selves. What we need now, he says, is a re-enchantment, a way to renew our relationship with nature, reawaken to spiritual reality, and reclaim the sense of connection and hope that gives meaning to our lives. Dr. Hank Wesselman joins me now to discuss the compelling blueprint for the emerging transformational spirituality that he shares in his latest book, The Reenchantment, A Shamanic Path to a Life of Wonder. Hank Wesselman, welcome.
Hey, Sandy, good to hear your voice, and aloha from Hawaii Island.
Thank you, and aloha to you too. Hank, Ralph Metzner, author of The Well of Remembrance and Green Psychology, writes in his endorsement for the reenchantment, "We are living in a time when the materialist world order and the human obsessions with manipulation, profit, and war have brought our civilization to the raw edge of global catastrophe. Into that perfect storm come voices that urge us to remember what we once knew, what shamans and Gnostics and the mystics of antiquity taught. You," he says, "are one of those voices. So tell us, what is it that the shamans, the Gnostics and the mystics of antiquity taught, and how can it help us now when we live in a vastly different world than they did?"
Well, you know, Ralph was a friend of mine. He's, you know, he passed, did you hear?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
He passed away recently, about, within the last year or so. But we used to cross trails at conferences a lot. And as you know, he was a member of the Big Three. Ralph Metzner, okay, Timothy Leary, and Ram Dass. They were the three at Harvard who really set off the whole psychedelic revolution. And Ralph, you know, became a dean at the California Institute of Integral Studies. He was an academic like me, and so we shared a lot, you know, in common. So everyone who knew him, I'm sure, misses him greatly. But, you know, when you're talking about the mystics of the world, and the shamans were really the first mystics, as far as I know, they had a broad rapport. Or let's say they formed a bridge between their communities and the natural world. And this was extraordinarily important because the natural world provided everything for the people in prehistory. You know, we didn't begin to live in houses and villages until about 12,000 years ago. And before that, we camped out for about 2 million years. I'm talking about our lineage in the genus Homo. And, of course, Homo sapiens is the most recent expression of that lineage. So, you know, maintaining a good relationship with nature and with the spirits of nature was very important, because if the relationship floundered, and I might add that, you know, I constantly, when I was teaching academically in California, I would constantly meet children, they weren't really children. They were just out of high school, but I thought of them as children. And they'd never been to the beach. They'd never been in the mountains. You know, they'd spent all of their lives in shopping malls and suburbs. And there was a profound deficit, I think, because they didn't have that kind of rapport, that kind of relationship with nature. They lacked that sense of wonder, that sense of awe. And I think this is one of the gifts from the gods, you know, the fact that we can experience wonder, we can experience awe. And here, of course, I live on an island which has an active volcano right in the middle of it, and that mountain is awake, although right now she's sleeping. As you probably know, a year or so ago, we had a real time with her, and she destroyed an entire subdivision. Maybe it's a statement. I don't know. But, you know, the shamans of antiquity, they were the ones who really used their body and their mind to create a bridge between the personal world of form and the transpersonal world of spirit. And when that bridge was formed, the spiritual energies from the other side of the mirror could flow across that bridge and into our world, where they could have miraculous effects, like healing, for example. You know, over the 25 years or so that I've been teaching workshops at various institutes and centers around the country, I've seen the miraculous happen on a fairly regular basis. You know, it's all around us all the time, but most people seem to be sleepwalking through their lives, and so they miss it. You know, that's a great shame to me. So in terms of, you know, what I do with my books, and I've, you know, it's amazing. I've gotten 9 books published on the shamanic tradition, and this is really patting myself on the back here. It's not easy to get published. And I've been very lucky. You know, you might even say that maybe the spirits took a hand in things and made sure that these books got out into the world. How did you like the re-enchantment, by the way? Did you have a look at it?
Well, I have to tell you, and I've read several of your books. Yes, I've read the entire book. And I've got to say that it impacted me really deeply. There was one particular part of it that really got my... I mean, it all got my attention, but there was one piece where I was sitting up and saying, yes, 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 thank you, thank you, thank you. And we will get to that bit because I think it's really important because not many people are willing to voice some of the things that you voiced. And I think Sandra Ingerman pointed that out in her endorsement of the book. So I really do want to talk to you about that part, but we'll get to that a little bit later. First, I really want to know, you know, we all know that we are sitting in the middle of a time of massive, massive transformation. And I think many people feel that, you know, the outcome is still not decided. It really depends on what choices we make right now at this pivot period in our history. And what, you know, I think we can learn so much from the past and so much from the shamans and the ancients. And yet we have to find a way to make that fit in to a new world, because when we look at our young who are going to be inheriting this planet, you know, they didn't have what we had 20, 30, 40 years ago. They live in a technology-driven world. And, you know, how do we reach them? How do we share with them the wisdom and the knowledge that you and the ancients have been bringing forth?
Well, you know, there was a book that was published by the Institute of Noetic Sciences and the Fetzer Institute that came out in the year 2000. And you've probably seen it. It was written by Paul Ray and Sherry Ruth Anderson. It's called The Cultural Creatives, How 50 Million People Are Changing the World. Now, Ray is an anthropologist like I am, and he observed that in the United States today, and perhaps in Britain and Europe as well, there are primarily 3 major subdivisions. You've got the traditional people, the traditionalists. These are the ones who have been going to the same church for 75 years, and they're not going to change. They tend to be rather conservative in their voting habits, in their behavior and so forth and so on. They don't like things to change. They want things to stay just the way they are. Then they represent about 25% of the population. Then there are the modernists. The modernists are all those people working in cubicles at Hewlett-Packard and, you know, and corporations and driving taxis and working in restaurants. You know, these people are not overly concerned with spirituality, or let's say they haven't been until relatively recently. But then there is a third subdivision, which he calls the cultural creatives. I personally tend to think of us as the transformational community because we're progressive and we are in the process of creating a new world. And you know, the amazing thing is that there are millions of us. You know, Ray did his book on surveys carried out over 14 years, and he discovered that there were at least 50 million people in the United States alone who hold a system of beliefs, values, and trends that differ markedly from those of the general public. These are the people who are interested in spirituality. And, you know, if there are really 50 million and another 80 to 100 million in Britain and Europe, these are not small numbers. And the media, I think, has completely missed this. You know, that's just been my sort of idea. The media really thinks that we're still playing New Age woo games. And I don't consider myself a New Ager. I'm actually a scientist. And I've been working in the anthropology field, in the fossil man field, with people like the Leakeys in East Africa, looking for evidence for the origin, the mysterious origin of humanity. This is my research specialty. But, you know, that specialty brought me into the awareness of the fact that I am a self, and you are a self. And the greatest mystery of all is ourself. You know, who are, where did we come from? How did we get here? What are we supposed to be doing here? And these are questions which interest the transformational community a great deal. You know, I've met so many interesting people across the years. Shamanism, you know, I was brought into this, I think we talked about this before, through spontaneous visionary experiences when I was a child, growing up in New York City. You know, there was Central Park, and Central Park enchanted me because it was nature. And then, of course, it went away when I was steamrolled by puberty and began to pay attention to what Zorba the Creek called the female of the species. But, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s, I was out there on expedition in Africa, and I began to have these mystical experiences. And, you know, I really didn't know what they were at that time. In those days, I worshipped solely at the altar of science. So my books are a strange amalgam of science and mysticism. I was drawn in that direction by those experiences because, you know, once you've had the awesome jolt of the real thing, I'm not talking about, you know, sort of New Age woo-woo stuff. I'm talking about the fact that we human beings have an ability which can be cultivated. If I've got this right, there is a program on our inner hard drive, and our inner hard drive is our DNA. And when that program is double-clicked with the right mouse, you know, it could be drumming, it could be tantra, it could be trauma, it could be hallucinogens if you use them. You know, I don't, but many people do. When you've had that experience, it changes you. You know, when you've had the direct experience of spirit, it changes you. It's just, there's just no way it's not going to. And the world is different then. So my major awakening happened in my early 40s again, when these experiences were happening in Africa. I wasn't ready. I was only in my early 30s. But 10 years later, they happened in Berkeley, where I was living. No drugs involved, no alcohol, no intentions. You know, they usually happened on the heels of a joyous marital encounter, if I can put it that way. That's mm-hmm. why I slipped the word Tantra as one of the great gateways to transcendence. So, you know, I was drawn in this direction, and I don't consider myself a master of anything. I consider myself a student, kind of like the Dalai Lama considers himself a humble monk. I believe that we all fall into that category, and we all have certain rights and certain responsibilities since we're inhabiting a body here on planet Earth. And I think it's important to come into relationship with those responsibilities. You know, here in America, we've got a Bill of Rights, but we don't have a Bill of Responsibilities. And I think that was something that was left out. You know, that's just between you and I, of course. You and I and the lamppost, as my father used to say. So yeah. My life has been a very strange one and a very interesting one because I still work in high-powered science. The only way you get out of it is in a box. And, you know, there's the mystical side. And I'm quite clear on which one is operating at any one time. So, you know, I could say that, you know, I've lived my life pretty much like an adventure. And now I'm 78 years old, believe it or not. And so I'm facing the end. But, you know, I've become very interested in mythology as I've gotten older because, as you pointed out, there is a new cultural mythos which is coming into being. It's happening steadily, and it's happening rather modestly, rather silently. But, you know, that means that the old stories, you know, are really no longer compelling us. Myths don't die. They change. Yes. They're modernized. Mm-hmm. And this only happens once or twice in 1,000 years. And we are right smack dab in the middle of one right now. So this is a very transformational period. And those of us who are involved in the spiritual community, I think, are contributing a great deal behind the scenes to what is going to happen in the next generation or so. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. We have to go to break now, Hank. I really want to pick this up when we come back. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is research paleoanthropologist, shaman, and critically acclaimed author of 9 books on shamanism, Dr. Hank Wesselman. We're talking about his latest book, The Reenchantment, A Shamanic Path to a Life of Wonder, which has been described as constructing an antidote to the profound disenchantment that plagues many people today. We'll be back with more.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times' flagship radio show, What Is Going On. As a longtime editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers. So I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. just an ever-growing library compiled by recognizable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys, plus free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who have walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, S-E-D-G-B-E-E-R.com. I'll see you there.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your health care provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Hank Wesselman, before the break, we were talking about the new cultural mythos and dismantling some of the old myths. And I really want to pursue the emerging role of shamanism in the West today and how the shamanic path can help us during this changing time. But first, I want to talk about the piece in your book that really had me sitting up in my bed and chanting, yes, yes, yes. And that is where you spoke about the egregores, because this is something that I think we have been beginning to get glimpses of. I mean, if you look at Neil Gaiman's book, American Gods, which was made into a successful TV series where he was talking about, you know, the gods really only exist as long as we give them attention. And in that whole section of your book, what was so exciting for me is how you were tracing how these myths grew into religions and belief systems and, you know, channeled people's thinking and our entire ways of being for many, many years. And these are the very things that have to also be dismantled, aren't they?
Well, was there something specifically that caught your attention? You know, people like Graham Hancock, for example, have said that the great tragedy of the Western world is that so many people have been misled by our religious teachers, because our religious teachers tend not to be mystics. You know, they're simply parroting the same stuff that they were taught by other people who are not mystics. And so, you know, the public at large, you know, regards someone who is having mystical experiences with a good deal of concern. You know, we don't grow up in a society in which spirits are part of our experience reality. So, you know, for example, myself, I learned how to conceal my knowledge and my abilities when I was a kid because, you know, social ridicule is a tremendous controlling mechanism, and so is organized religion. And I have heard many people observe that organized religion, as it exists, on one hand, it's about community, which is very important. But on the other hand, it's created most of the problems that we're dealing with in the world,
yes,
and will yes continue to deal with.
Absolutely.
So it's about, you know, direct revelation.
Yes.
And I think that once you've had direct revelation, you know, can consider the myths, the old myths, in a completely new light. You know, I think even children can understand this. You know, myths are not meant to be taken literally. They're meant to be understood. Because within each mythos, there are kernels of eternal truth. And these are revelations to us when we stumble across them. At least they were for me. But, you know, there was a section in the book that some people found very disturbing. Do you remember the section called The Masters of Deception?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I've got all of that copied and bookmarked. Yeah.
The Masters of Deception. You know, my publisher, Sounds True, asked me when I was writing this book if I would make a pass over the dark side of the Force. And I looked at them and I said, you want me to make a pass over the dark side? And they said, yes. And I said, why? And they said, well, you know, none of the other light chasers will go there. It's sweetness and light.
Yes.
And so I did. I said, all right, I'll do that. And when I actually created that chapter, they changed almost not a word. They were rather silent about it as well, because it's not one of those things that supports a lot of spiritual thinking. But, you know, the masters of deception, the Gnostics of the ancient world, called them the Archons. And they sound like science fiction, which is why so many people who've written about the Gnostic Gospels have completely ignored the stories of the Archons. The Archons are deceivers. And the interesting thing is that they're not spirits. They're actually thought forms. And I think that we humans had a role in creating them, although the myth of the Sophia, pronounced Sophia, you know, they could be also a kind of accident that actually happened. But as thought forms, they exist as mind parasites. Mind parasites. They reside within the human psyche as uninvited guests. And although they're not evil themselves, they encourage those who they infect to go ever more deeply into the negative polarity until they eventually reach a threshold. And if they step across that threshold, then they no longer can self-correct. You know, they go into the realm of evil. The current president of the United States is a beautiful example of this, of a man who's infected with the ones called E'epa by the Hawaiians, and as Wendigo or Wetiko by the Cree Indians in North America. The indigenous people have been aware of these dudes for years, for centuries, and they track them. They track the realm of evil and how it expresses itself. And so I wrote a chapter about that and about the Gnostic perception, the Wetiko perception, the E'epa perception, which I got from my Hawaiian friend Hale Makua many years ago. And I think it's given everybody something to really think about, because I suspect that there is a Wetiko, an Archon, an E'epa, astride Western civilization. And I think it may be one of the children of ancient Rome, the lords of finance and politics, who were very much like us in very many ways in our time. And I think that this egregore, as they're called, is astride Western civilization right now. And all of the evil in the world, all of the darkness in the world, is really due to their influence on human beings who have brought that darkness through. Now, the question is, what do we do about something like this once we discover that it's real? And there was a book by Paul Levy called Dispelling Wetiko, which is a very good book. In fact, I would add that to my book list for you. The last chapter of that book is called Wetiko No More. These are kind of like psychic vampires, and I don't mean to frighten people when I discuss them. I think knowing what you're dealing with is very, very important, especially when you look at the state of the world right now. But, you know, vampires, despite Hollywood's attempts to entertain us with vampire movies, vampires are not good guys. They're bad guys. And, as you know, vampires, in the myth of the vampire, they cast no reflection in a mirror. They cast no shadow. That's because they don't want to be seen. That's a sort of metaphorical expression of the fact that the vampires, the mental parasites, they don't want to be seen, because once they've been seen, the game is up. Mm-hmm. And so once you understand who they are and you sort of issue them out, hopefully gently, They can go and play with somebody else, you know, and we're free. I really recommend that book, by the way, Dispelling Huetico by Paul Levy. He's a Jungian, lives in Portland, Oregon, I think. I've met him several times at bookstores. So, you know, that part of the book, I think, was a big eye-opener for a lot of people.
Yes.
But then the last part of the book, when I'm in conversation with my friend, the kahuna, Hale Makua, about how we all have to be lighthouses in a dark world because darkness cannot survive in the presence of light. You know, I think that's a very appropriate way to live life. I often fail, of course. I remember one time I was sitting in a restaurant with Makua. This is many years ago. And we were talking about the state of the world at that time. This was in 2003, just before the United States committed one of the most horrendous blunders of diplomacy that have ever been created. You know, we invaded Iraq. That was George Bush, George W. Bush's idea with his cronies. Well, there was an election coming up, and I looked at Makua and said, listen, we've got to get rid of this guy in Washington. And he looked very thoughtful, and he had a long pull on his margarita and said, no, George Bush needs to be reelected. I said, what? And I jumped into the negative polarity, and I stomped around, you know, sort of pissing and moaning about this guy. And Makua just watched me, worked on his margarita. And then when I was done, he reached down and hauled me back out again. He said, no, George W. Bush needs to be reelected. And I said, why? He said, otherwise we'll have to repeat.
Oh. Mm.
And we didn't get the lesson, did we?
No.
We didn't get the lesson. And 8 years later, we elected the Don the Con. I think of him as the baloney man in the White House. And without going political on you, because this is not a political talk show, you know, this man is dangerous. He's very dangerous. And he's a classic Huetico. And I think that our crisis of leadership is probably due to the same thing. Now, this is, you know, my perception as somebody who has a mystical bent and who does healings for people and teaches workshops and brings people into the awareness of the worlds of things hidden. You know, the indigenous person sees the world as being made up of two halves. There's the world of things seen and the world of things hidden. And the shaman is the one who can see into the world of things hidden. It's a learned skill that improves with practice. And I've gotten better at it, you know, over the last 40 years. And, you know, there are times when, you know, I kind of despair at what's going on in the world. But, you know, I have hope, because if there are really that many of us transformationals out there, you know, we're going to step up and into the next cycle of ages. Makua observed that the last cycle of ages that began with the advent of Christianity in Rome and lasted for 2,000 years, it was really about creating separation. And the new cycle of ages that we now have the opportunity to step up and into is about connection. That's a very different thing. But, yes, you know, if we fail to accept the challenge and step up and into what is approaching us from the future, we'll step back into the last cycle, and the result will be very much what we're seeing right now. Mm. It's kind of a sad thing to say. It's not very positive, but it's, you know, it's on the plate, so to speak.
Of course it is. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, why I was so excited about those chapters was because it is demonstrating something that many people may not have come across elsewhere. You know, I've been aware, I didn't know the name egregores and I didn't know the history, but I have certainly been aware of this phenomena, if you like, to call it that, that, you know, thought forms do exist, and they become like viruses, and we all carry them with us. We're so susceptible to them. But the way forward, the way to get beyond that is, as you say, the path of direct revelation. Because if we know who we are, then we are not susceptible.
You know, this is what Makua said. He said, the greatest mystery is ourself. And he said, the first question that you have to answer in life is, who are you? And what are you doing here? Where did we come from? What is this all about? What's my role in it? This is very, very important, because once you know who you are, you've experienced authentic initiation. Basically, you cannot experience authentic initiation unless you know who you are. And this is what you're talking about. That includes looking into your own darkness and dealing with it. You know, there's sort of dark programming which we've gotten from these Wetiko. They're like a virus, in fact, because it's contagious. It's contagious. It can be picked up by people. People can be infected by the virus because of it operates by psychic stealth. In fact, I might mention, since you brought it up in your request for books and the fact that there's a lot of BS in the metaphysical world, you've got to have a very finely tuned BS antenna before you, you know, take something terribly seriously. You know, psychics, and I don't mean to downgrade what they do and their abilities by any means, but psychics are often deceived, because the Wetiko is very adept at mimicking, and it can get into somebody's mind and literally take a form, a thought form, a memory, and appear to that person in that form. You know, and this happens in the psychic experience. So psychics have to be very adept at checking their sources, because a tremendous amount of misinformation gets spread all over the place through people who mean well, but who may be being deceived by this, the very strange psychic virus. This virus actually exists in the same realm that psychics operate, and this is why they're so vulnerable to it. The virus is not a spirit being. It's a thought form. And the psychic world, thought, thinking, feeling, emoting, that's all one particular level of experience and reality. So this is why some people are more vulnerable to it than others. But, you know, on the other side of the mirror, there are increasing number of mystics who are coming together and sharing their experiences. For example, my wife Jill and I, with a tech wizard, are right in the process of launching a year-long shamanic visionary circle, which is going to be online. Most of my workshops for this year at places like Omega and so forth and so on, most of them have been canceled because the centers are not open. They're closed. So we decided to create an online visionary circle that will meet once a week for an hour, in which case I will provide about, maybe half an hour of narrative and teaching, and then we'll engage in shamanic field work. That's what anthropologists like to do. They like to do field work. And so we're going to do journey work, visionary journey work on very specific coordinates, very specific topics. And then we're going to have a Facebook page as well as a website where everybody can connect with, you know, the circle and register. And there's a small fee to cover costs. And this is sort of one of the ways in which I'm trying to bring more light into the world. And more people are doing this, which I think is very, very helpful, because...
Very necessary. I'm going to hold you there, Hank, because we have to go to another break, but I want to talk about this more after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgemeer, and I'm speaking with research paleoanthropologist, shaman, and critically acclaimed author, Dr. Hank Westerman. And we're talking about his latest book, The Reenchantment, A Shamanic Path to a Life of Wonder. We'll be back with more from Hank Westerman after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Hank Westerman, you've said that each of us has the potential to expand our consciousness and engage with the mystery. The mystery, of course, being the mystery of us, which you say will balance our bodies, our minds, and our spirits. And I'm really excited to hear about your year-long weekly series of workshops, because that is one way that we can do it. And I think that there is definitely a renewed interest in shamanism. I hear of so many people who are getting interested in it, but there is a distinction that has to be made, isn't there? And you I've heard you make it, that just because people go to, you know, Peru or somewhere and they take ayahuasca and they have an experience, that doesn't mean that they are shamans, as many might think. So talk a little bit to that and tell us about some of the things that we will get to experience in this year-long series that you're offering.
Well, I remember asking a fellow anthropologist maybe 30 years ago, how do you tell when somebody's an authentic shaman? That's a good question. He got right to the point. He said, there are three things. Number one, do they journey to other worlds? Number two, do they have relationships with spirits? And number three, do they perform miracles? This is really what defines the shaman. The shaman is the interface between the world of things seen and the world of things hidden. And this world of things hidden is just as vast as the universe outside, the physical universe. It's an extraordinary experience. You know, and more transformational people are seeking that transcendence. Mm. And the fact is that the shamanic method is extraordinarily easy to learn. And with practice, it gets more and more vivid, more and more detailed. And, you know, I remember, you know, in the days when I just started to teach shamanic workshops, I would send people off to the spirit world with my drum. The drum is kind of like the horse that the shaman rides. The drum will take you out, and the drum will bring you back. You know, as long as you can hear the drum, you can never get lost. But when the drum is played in a theta brainwave rhythm, which is roughly 4 to 5 beats per second, it facilitates activating both halves of the higher brain, of the cerebrum, which then respond to the sonic driving of the drum and destabilize ordinary consciousness and then restabilize it in a new brainwave pattern, both halves of the brain working together. This is a magical thing. You know, this is what true magic is. And I would send Western people who are non-tribal people off on visionary adventures, and they would return with accounts that would pass muster at any Aboriginal campfire. We're seeing the same things that the Aboriginal people see. We're experiencing the same phenomena, the same process. You know, the shamanic process is really a verb, although the word process is a noun. It's about doing it, and it's extraordinarily easy to do it. You know, this is one of the things that our ancestors in antiquity discovered probably millennia ago. I would say thousands of years ago, maybe longer. There was something you wanted to say.
I'm sorry, say that last bit again.
Was there something you wanted to say? I could hear
no,
you sort of...
No. I was absolutely entranced. I was listening to you. No, I was there right with you on a journey.
Oh, that's great. Have you ever engaged in the shamanic tradition?
I have not. And I have to say that of late, I have been very called to it. I interviewed Robert Moss a week or two ago, after reading a few of his books, and I got myself lots of CDs on drumming, and I have already decided that I'm joining your series.
Uh-huh. Well, the drum, you know, the CDs of drumming are very useful. I used to use them in my workshops so that I could journey with my friends, but you know, the drum is very powerful and it has a vibrational quality to it. And so when a drum is played at the right brainwave rhythm, all sorts of interesting things suddenly start appearing on the screen. You know, I just might mention, do you know Nicholas Breeze Wood, who publishes shamanic, I think it's the Sacred Hoop magazine?
No, I don't.
He lives in Wales. And he's a Mongolian shaman. He's been initiated by Mongolian shamans, and he practices a very distinct kind of shamanism, which is distinctly Mongolian. And, you know, this is really where shamanism came from.
Yeah.
Anyway, he publishes a magazine called Sacred Hoop online, Nicholas Breeze Wood. I'll send you an email address for him, because I think you would find him very interesting. He also does teaching from time to time. And if you're in the UK and he's in Wales, that's not a long drive.
No, it's not. Not at all. I'd be very interested in that. And I am very... I tell a lie. I did have an experience once on Idlewild Mountain. I was taken on a shamanic journey by somebody I knew. And that was my only experience, and it was very profound. And as somebody who finds it challenging to meditate, I find the drum incredibly helpful to me.
The drum does help. The drum
yes.
does help. And of course, singing bowls help, dancing, singing with voice. There are different ways to achieve transcendence. But the drum is almost universally used by shamans wherever drums can have a drum head that's taut. You know, in the Amazon, for example, there's no way you're going to keep a drum head taut if it's made out of leather. And in places like that, they've developed very powerful hallucinogens, like ayahuasca, for example,
mm-hmm.
the vine of the dead.
Mm.
Have you ever had any experience with ayahuasca?
I have not. I've been offered the opportunity, and I have to admit, it really appeals to me, but I'm also such a big coward, and I hate throwing up. So I have not indulged.
Well, I support you. I was invited to an institute in Brazil about 10 years ago, and I was down there for 2 weeks as a visiting teacher, And during that time, we did 5 ayahuasca ceremonies. And I just have to admit that ayahuasca is not my medicine. You know, some people just swear by it. It's rather like the hallucinogens. And I think it works well for people who are very mental and have all sorts of mental blocks that don't allow them to vision. So it's kind of like psychic dynamite. But I didn't find it appealing. And in fact, I had one experience which was very frightening, in which something was piggybacking on the hallucinogen. And I literally ended up fighting for my life for about 5 hours, which I didn't enjoy. So I haven't taken anything like that since. And I, you know, I'm one of those really strange people who's never taken LSD. You know, I've had my share of sacred herb, of course, because I grew up in the 60s. And sacred herb was very much part of the culture at that time, and it still is. But I've never done peyote or datura or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are about 300 hallucinogenic substances, plants, that have been discovered. So they're around. And it's been my experience that when indigenous people have psychotropic plants growing in their neighborhood, so to speak, they know about them and they use them, but they're always used in ceremonial circumstances which are very tightly controlled. It's not about recreational drug tripping on Sunday afternoon and taking a walk in the park, if you get my drift.
Yeah. It's not something that particularly appeals to me. And if I'm going to do anything like this, I want to work with people that I can trust. So we've only got a few minutes left, Hank. Tell me, at the end of this year, if I join your weekly series of online workshops, what can I expect to change during that year?
Well, you could go to the website, which is shamanvisionarycircle.com. shamanvisionarycircle.com. And I've actually got a syllabus of what we're going to be doing, 47 episodes, 47 adventures with journey work during the year, and you can sort of look it over. But, you know, this is something which is launched right now, and I think the cart, you know how you fill your cart with what you want to do? I think the cart is going to close by next Wednesday, because that's going to be the first. I just did 3 webinars, and my wife joined me for the last one. And you can actually have a look at those webinars. Did I send you one?
You did, I have watched the one with you and Jill.
I'll send you one. Yeah. But in the meantime, you know, I'm very grateful for your participation in this world. You know, it's people like us that are going to create the new world. And it's going to happen. There's just no way it's not. No, because when things swing, the pendulum swings too far in the other direction, it has to swing back. And I believe that it will. And this, I find hope for the future.
Hank Wesselman, it's always fun to talk to you. It's always very instructive. I always learn so much from your books. Thank you.
You are welcome. Gratitude. And it's a wonderful interview, too. I really like to talk to you.
I'll have to have
a cup of tea.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do love this book. I really do. And I would encourage any. I've enjoyed them all, but there's something about this one that has really stood out for me. So thank you very much for producing it. And I think we have to close it there. Hank Wesselman, thank you for joining us today. If anybody is interested in knowing more about your year-long course, they can go to shamanvisionarycircle.com. They can also learn more about your work, your classes, your books, and everything you do at sharedwisdom.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. In the meantime, I'll be back with another edition of What is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.